charge is that? Are you like the next person down in line?
I am. So many people are gone. I'm next in line.
I would actually say
we'll go ahead and start, call the Subcommittee on Natural Resources to order. And we're going to reverse the order just and continue with the public hearing on House Bill 5019 with the Department of Forestry. And do you have anything to add to the discussion at this point?
No. Senator Hansel, Chair Hansel, just to go over what where we were yesterday. We've gone through the policy option packages from fire protection, the administration division, agency administration, and private forests. And I believe we're starting today with policy option packages for the state forests. And then we're going to go into a discussion of the key performance measures by the agency. And somewhere in between here, we are intending to take a break and do a work session on Senate Bill 5544. So hopefully that won't interrupt folks too much, but I think we can just get started.
Mr. Decker, if you'd like to come. And
good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Decker, Oregon State Forester, Director of the Department of Forestry. We're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. Thank you for the opportunity for us to be here with you this morning. Just a brief reset. One of the things we talked about yesterday was how we go through a process as we get ready for each biennium to identify strategic emphases that line up with Board of Forestry priorities and agency priorities as we build our budget request, and we activate those through the policy option packages. And in the last couple of biennia, we've had different focuses. In 11, we focused on restoring private forest program. Last session, we focused on the Wildfire Protection Act. This year's primary emphasis is really on restoring our business capacity, which you heard about from Satish a moment ago, and on state forests. So that's where we pick up here this morning. And Liz Dent, the chief of our state forests division, is here to walk us through these POPs.
Liz? Hey, thank you, Doug. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I am the Division Chief for State Forests. We appreciate the opportunity to present our State Forest Option Packages this morning. I'd like to just take a few minutes to put these POPs in context with a brief background on state forests. State forests are mandated by statute to achieve what we call greatest permanent value, and we do this by providing economic, environmental, and social benefits for Oregonians over time and across the landscape. ODF's program is almost entirely funded through the sale of timber. About 64% of these revenues are distributed to counties, schools, and local taxing districts, and the remainder is retained by Department of Forestry to help cover costs associated with managing our forests. During the 2009 economic downturn, state forests made a 30% reduction in our workforce and in our forest management investments. Even with these reductions, the continued downturn in the timber market, harvest revenues remain insufficient to cover costs of managing the land and have reduced the availability of revenues to counties, schools, and local taxing districts.
Now that we have a quorum, I'm suggesting that maybe Chair Devlin, we should move into the work session.
Okay, we'll resume right after this. It shouldn't take for long.
All right. Warm-up session.
I will open a work session on SB 5544. Mr. Siebert.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 5544 is a blank appropriation bill. Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending the following changes to the bill, which is included in the Dash 1 amendment, which replaced the bill. First, appropriate $100,000 general fund to the Department of Agriculture for the Wolf Compensation and Grant Assistance Program. This would restore the total state support to $200,000, which is what was provided for this biennium. The second item is a $90,000 general fund appropriation, authorizing $90,000 of other funds expenditure limitation, and establishing two limited duration natural resource specialist two positions which is 1.00 FTE, to continue limited duration work that the positions were doing this biennium on sage-grouse conservation. The positions identify habitat improvement projects and practices on private lands that will benefit sage-grouse as well as the landowner. And revenue for the other funds comes via Pheasants Forever, which transferred the money to the Intermountain West Joint Venture, which made a grant to ODFNW for this work. And LFO is recommending the Dash 1 amendment.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 5544.
Discussion. Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries.
Mr. Chair, LFO is recommending the measure be moved to the full the Joint Committee on Ways and Means as amended.
Okay. Motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5544 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Discussion of the motion. Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries.
Carriers.
Senator Hansel, will you carry to the
I'd be
floor
honored.
To the Senate floor, and who would like to carry to the House floor? Don't everyone? Oh, well.
No good.
Okay.
Who was it?
Representative Hatt.
Okay.
Close that work session, and we open a public hearing on the Department of Forestry. And I'll give the gavel back to to Senator Hansel. I'm going to LFO.
Thank you for your consideration.
Of course.
Appreciate it.
We resume.
Okay, picking up where we left off again, just for the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I'm the Division Chief for State Forests. Mr. Chair, given this fiscal shortfall that I was just discussing, the Oregon Board of Forestry has directed the agency to both increase financial viability and conservation benefits from the management of Oregon State Forests. The agency is taking a three-pronged approach to this, to solving the problem. These include, first of all, revising the forest management plan to increase revenues from the sale of timber and also to improve conservation outcomes. Secondly, we are improving our business model practices to increase efficiencies and revenues. And finally, we're exploring alternative sources of revenue. Mm-hmm. So in this context, the funding from these POPs is proposed as bridge funding, meaning that the funds will be used during the 15-17 biennium to provide some fiscal stability while the Board of Forestry and the Oregon Department of Forestry complete our forest management plan revisions and improve our state forest business model. This general fund request targets aspects of our program that provide public benefits to Oregonians but that do not generate revenue. Specifically, our POPs focus on recreation and monitoring, both of which are an integral part of achieving our state forest mission, again, to provide social benefits. So I'd like to start with Package 131, which addresses recreation, education, and interpretation. These programs provide several social benefits to Oregonians. In response to the 2009 recession, State Forest Division cut the programs by 30%. So this $1.4 million POP would provide bridge funding to do several things. First of all, it would provide a fund shift for six existing positions. These positions essentially are the face of our State Forest Recreation Program that implements and coordinates trail maintenance, construction, and collaborative efforts to create recreational opportunities for the public. The funds would also help to purchase equipment and structures needed to maintain and construct ATV, hiking, and equestrian trails, and to maintain and improve campgrounds on state forests. Finally, the funds would support the education and interpretation programs delivered from our Tillamook Forest Center. These programs interface with the public and schools to educate these entities on a range of historic and current forest management topics. So without this package, ODF would continue to be limited in our ability to implement strategic initiatives regarding recreation, education, and interpretation activities. We would also face continued financial instability for state forests during this time when we're completing the revisions to our forest management plan.
Are you about to move on?
I was.
Yeah, thank you. So can you talk to me? You said a couple things that I'm interested in. One was, the one I remember first. I remember the other one. The other one was about continued weak timber market, or you used
the
So tell me more about that, because I wasn't clear that we were still in a continued weak situation with timber sales, but maybe we are. I'm just not aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. Chair Hansel, Representative Clem. So I was referencing, really trying to give a foundation in the cuts that we made to our program during the 2009 recession. And so at that time, certainly we had a depressed market.
Right.
And then that strung out longer than was it, you know, than we were able to accommodate in terms of generating revenue from the sale of timber. So it put us in this position of needing to make changes to our program to rebuild our forest development fund.
And if I just, it's going to take a little while. So the chart I remember, which was sort of continuing downward trends, at some point has the market, though, turned around where for other people doing this kind of activity it's going back up, but ours is still going down?
Certainly. That's exactly, well, there's some need for explanation there. The downward trend that is a prediction for the next 5 years and what we would expect in terms of revenue generated from the sale of timber. And certainly, as our other timber businesses right now, we are experiencing an uptick in the market, both in terms of demand and the value of that timber or the stumpage price.
Mm-hmm.
The prediction is that in the future there would be some variability in the market, which would be expected certainly in the timber business.
Sure.
And so that prediction out to 5 years is looking at that, accounting for that variability in the market, expecting particularly changes in foreign markets.
Okay, so that, if I might... forest management plans that you referred to, like this is sort of bridge financing until those are updated. What was the starting point of that process?
Representative Clem, so there's a time frame in which we started that process, and it really started with the establishment of a team to evaluate financial viability in state forests, and that was wrapped up in 2012-2013 timeframe. And it was that work that helped the agency and the Board of Forestry identify that indeed we had made significant cuts in the program, and that further cuts in the program would likely interfere with our ability to meet our core business functions. So then some other recommendations were made, and those are the ones that we're pursuing right now. So a change in the plan, improved business practices, and seeking other sources of funding. And that started with the Board of Forestry's direction towards the end of 2013, beginning of 2014, in which they directed us to change the plan, in fact, to look at a different way of managing the forest that would increase revenue, as well as meet these increases in environmental benefits.
And that, what you said, 2013?
Yeah, I think I'm remembering that time frame correctly.
In terms of the forest management plan change, the financial viability work that was begun, really 2010. The Board of Forestry created the financial viability work group in 2011, which was precursor to the plan. The plan also has a kind of a review period, a 10-year review period. This is a plan that was approved in 2001 and had been amended since then.
So maybe this is starting to get closer to the time I'm thinking of. What I'm remembering in particular was in 2007, there were several pieces of legislation that were sort of directing the Board of Forestry to do things. In 2009, I think there were more. I was chairing the policy committee that had those bills,
mm-hmm.
and working with, in particular at the time, Senator Roblin and John Blackwell, who was the chair of the board. And eventually, in the late, towards the end of session anyway, late spring, summer, there was actually a vote that was taken. The board used to operate by consensus only, I think, and they didn't usually take split votes, but they took a split vote to change the management plans or review the management plans. I was just trying to Google to see what I could find, and I found a press release from the Wild Salmon Center talking about it. They weren't overly happy about it, but it basically said in a factual way that the board voted to review its forest management plan with changes due back to the board by the next spring, mm-hmm. which would be late 2010 then. And it also had it's during that review that forestry officials will better define the greatest permanent value too. And so I'm wondering if that 2009 vote to bring something back by 2010 then morphed into these fiscal reviews, or that's different. There was a vote, there was a management plan revision, and now we're talking about a different one, or this is the same one 5 years later, still not done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Representative Clement. It's an important distinction. We, in fact, did revise the plan in 2010, and that revision focused on two things: changing the percent of the landscape that would be managed for older forest structure, and then secondly, to describe our strategies for the conservation of what's described as species of concern. And those two things, one, the change in older forest structure was a recognition that we needed to increase revenues, and the species of concern strategies were incorporated because we were no longer pursuing an HCP.
So then did the, in fact, they reference this now, I read back up the press release, it says the change of the plan means 22% of the forest would have a complex structure of trees of varying ages, and in 80 years, 32% of the forest, so it seemed to be a goal to get more, a higher percent of complex structures was the point of it. It also talked about like a 70-30 sort of goal. At that same time,
that language was included in legislation that we saw in a couple of different sessions.
Yeah.
That also coincided with the board's review of the greatest permanent value rule. They have there's greatest permanent value is expressed in statute in Chapter 530,
yeah.
and so the board has defined that in rule. The board went through a very deliberative process with a public advisory committee to review its GPV rule, which essentially is the goalposts that we're managing these lands for, as well as the planning rule. And so that was, it was concurrent. It was mm-hmm. right in there with the management plan change, which increased harvest levels about 22 million board feet on state forest land. Kind of coming out, we had just laid off about 30% of our workforce and cut our budget about 30%. And kind of coming out of that, worked on the financial viability ideas for ways that we can change our business model, which led to the revision of the forest management plan. The 70-30 that you hear of, that you mentioned today, is the board is currently in a process of evaluating a land allocation approach where we would create emphasis areas, one for wood and for production, and one for conservation. And we're in the process right now of working with the board and our constituents to model what that looks like. So those are, they're kind of all, it's all a part of the effort that you've referred to.
Just seems like there's, I'm just still stuck with that one chart showing the long-term downward
right.
trend. I know it's not up, but from your earlier initial public hearings.
Right.
And it seemed like in the midst of the decline that was definitely market related and crash related, one of the things that I recall was the board opening up more volume, as you just mentioned, like the 22 million board feet, even though it was not necessarily market demand driven only, it was more about sustaining infrastructure in some of these communities
mm-hmm.
just to keep their
That's
mills
right.
open.
Yep.
And so then I guess what I would have normally I would have expected is then when, because we upped it a little bit, not necessarily for market reasons, and then the market has been getting better, I would expect to see it turn around and go back
mm-hmm.
up. And it's always hard when you see anything that says, well, not for everybody, for people like me, it's hard to see anything that says shifting positions from timber sales to general fund. In some cases, that would be appropriate because it really shouldn't be on the department to fund things that are really the responsibility of the taxpayer, for example. But on the other hand, for so many decades, mm-hmm. we've been able to fund all kinds of things that weren't the responsibility of of the department through timber sale revenues. And the counties have been able to do things, and schools have been able to be funded. So anytime you see shifting away from what's been the historical nature of our of these rural communities and rural public services and rural budgets, you know, you want to question it because it's a big change from what the state's always been about. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's how I'm going to continue probably to be asking questions, is I want to understand how much of this shifting and or downward decline in revenue is because of policy, and how much of it is market, and those and how much are cost drivers just embedded within the system, and OPE and all those other things that, that you have to deal with like every other public body.
These are all the elements. Yeah, you've identified them. Yep.
So for this slide.
Let me kind of hitchhike, if I may, on what Representative Clem said, because I share some of the same concerns that he's highlighted. It seems to me that you've got a rule that you have implemented, not necessarily legislatively, but the greatest permanent value, and then you have the Oregon Forest Practices Act, mm-hmm. and there seems to be somewhat of maybe a disconnect, because the rule seems to override what in action on the ground for the Oregon Forest Practices Act, and therefore, as you look around the forest, at least currently, it seems to me the private sector forests are thriving, or at least doing pretty well. And like Representative Clem, we continue to go down, not because the Forest Practices Act necessarily prohibits what's being done. The goals are still there, but the GPV kind of overrules, and we end up then having to come to the general fund to make up what should have been done in the harvest. And when you compare it to the private lands, they're making money and we're not. Right. And there's a disconnect there I need some help on.
I think you have the dimensions. These are the elements. And I would want to just describe relative to the Forest Practices Act. When we went through our budget presentation, you know, we talked about this idea that there's a continuum of different landowner objectives across the scale in Oregon, and that's really what makes our forests, our 30 million acres, work. We have private forest lands which are primarily production focused. We have public forest lands that have a range of other values, and so the Board of Forestry, over time, through rule and policy, has described its place on that continuum as something that's not just focused on production, but focused on social and environmental values as well. So kind of a different goal. It's not a goal that is, and the Forest Practices Act provides a set of standards that are out there that all landowners must meet. So I think the Board of Forestry, through GPV, through the rule, has basically said we're gonna manage public lands to produce a different suite of benefits. We're gonna produce revenue, but we're also gonna provide recreation, education, interpretation. We're gonna do research and monitoring. We're gonna provide habitat and a suite of other values. I think the challenge is the business model that we're operating under, you know, which is around generating all of the revenue to cover everything that's in that suite, is kind of a commercial model. So the Forest Practices Act is sound and solid, and it provides that baseline, but the policy choices on these state forest lands are different than on private forest lands, and they're different than the BLM or the Forest Service would make on federal lands. So it's that range. I hope that helps a little bit.
Well, it does, but I think it begs the question. What Representative Clem was pointing out is that it sounds to me like the Board of Forestry has determined that they're going to move away from a self-sustaining model, a business model, to do different things that they can't pay for themselves or have the general, and we'll just go to the legislature, we'll just go and get general fund to do this and not be responsible for funding it ourselves within the framework of what historically we've done.
I can understand that perception of it. You know, I think the board recognizes, just as I've described, that I think the business model that we have, we're trying to produce a suite of values out there that we can't put up, that don't generate revenue. And so, you know, applying a commercial production business model to trying to produce values that we don't have a way to monetize is a challenge for us. And so it's, I would say it wasn't, it's not, the board is not just saying, let's just go to the general fund. I think the board is saying with these POPs, I think they're saying we need to really fundamentally relook at the business model that we have for managing these lands to find a way to represent the public value associated with these other benefits that we can't generate revenue from.
Can you do that without going to the general fund?
We have not identified the kind of specific source to do that. So the idea is with the POPs here is that they're a bridge fund. The board is fully engaged in revising the forest management plan and you know, expects that any successful revision to the plan must achieve financial viability, not and for these things as well. And it also must achieve conservation outcomes. So we're working on that, and the POPs would get us through that to when we can implement a new plan.
I kind of like being a substitute chair because I can keep asking questions.
All right.
One other quick question.
I'm ready to get back in eventually.
let me ask you a couple of quick questions then. If the GPV seems to be pretty significant in the driving of, you know, what's, you know, the policy, is there a KPM on that? And if not, should there be, and why or why
right.
not?
So we're going to get to our KPMs here in a moment, and there's a couple related to state forests, and the ones that are there are really relate to structural targets, kind of how old are the stand types on state forests. And that really derives from the current forest management plan that's in place that identified different structural targets. So the KPMs are really related to that, not specifically related
I understand
to GPV.
That.
There's an opportunity there.
But should we consider KPMs on that sense? It seems to me to be such a driver to the policy that we're doing. Is there any way that we can, shouldn't we set up the structure in order to measure that rather than just kind of have it sitting out there without too much?
We fully, you know, we have a set of 9 performance measures that we have for the management of state forest land that are different, a little bit different than the KPMs. KPMs are derivative from them. I'm a strong believer in that we ought to have KPMs and you ought to have KPMs that really represent the work of the agency. And in a minute, we'll have a chance to look at that. But I would be open to that, very much open to that idea.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Hack.
Thank you. I completely agree with what Senator Hansel just said, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask. And to me, it baffles me that we don't have that, given the state of where we're at. And so to be open to that, I would think that that would be a top priority. And I guess one of my concerns, and we talked about this before, was if we're cutting at 53%, and I understand that you're saying that, you know, socially there's a, you know, 30%, or I guess I want to know if what happens to the 70-30 idea? Are you saying that's off the table? Or because if we're at that, I think you could be a lot more viable than where you are now at the 53% or less.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, when you made your presentation before, it's clear that you're broke and you have to continue to come back to the general fund. So my question would be, how long do you intend to continue to do that without at some point the legislature saying enough's enough? I mean,
Mr. Chair, Representative Hack, so on the 70-30 plan, that is very much on the table. I mean, that's what the board is. We're fully engaged right now on that topic. And the notion that the success of a revised forest management plan will have us be financially viable. And we believe, the board believes, that the land allocation approach, a 70-30-like, I'm not sure what exactly the numbers will look like,
mm-hmm.
but a land allocation approach is our best bet to get there. So we're very focused on
okay.
that.
and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in your last presentation, there were some slides that indicated by 2018, I think it was, that you were completely in the red.
2020. And in the red, meaning that the Forest Development Fund, which is the state's share of revenue that we receive from the harvest of state timber, that would cross the zero line. That's mm-hmm. correct, in 2020. Right, and the other element that we talked about that just kind of the complexity is that our timber sale program, when you purchase a state timber sale contract, you have 3 years to harvest that. And so, making changes now in our forest management plan, if we were able to implement changes this fall, we'll have a lag time window before we can actually see that change financially.
Okay, so I don't know who to ask if I can keep going. Sorry. So if I'm hoping to be in this seat in 2020. Uh-huh. You won't come back to us in 2020 and be in the red and seeking more general fund dollars. Is that what you're assuring us?
The full intent of the board's request and our request through this POP is that this is bridge funding. This allows us to complete our forest management plan, have a financially viable plan, while also investing in these public values that the public expects from these state forest lands. Correct.
So you won't be coming back and asking for more?
I sure hope not.
Okay.
Representative Clem?
So I found another article here. This was an AP article. This one's on pacificrivers.org.
Right.
And so this, you had just talked about kind of moving towards, or I forget the language you used, but about the 70-30.
Land allocation?
Yeah. So what this says, and I don't know if it's accurate, it's an AP story from June of 2009. It said the board voted 4-2 to increase the timber harvest from Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests, even though there was a staff report said that might degrade salmon habitat. It said the change is expected to take effect over 2 years, would increase timber production as the focus on 70% and reduce fish and wildlife habitat to 30%. The split had been 50-50. Board Chairman John Blackwell, who voted in favor of the changes, said time had shown that the current management plan does not work. So what I'm trying to figure out is that was a vote that took place. It was supposed to get us to 70-30 already 2 years ago. Did they change direction formally, or has it just never made it that far? Because it's also talking about the management plan, and it sounded like it would be done in 2 years. And I haven't been on this committee in six years. And so I'm remembering all this stuff in my head that, you know, we already dealt with this. We already voted on this. I already badgered, you know, the board at the time all the way till they finally did this. Why are we back? But I lost 6 years of paying attention to this at this level. And so, you know, I remember being votes to already be at 70-30 and things like, you know, this article says the changes should be producing 196 million board feet within 2 years. And I don't know where we're at mm-hmm. on that front.
Sure. Representative Clem, that's certainly a pretty good accounting in that article of where we were at that time. There's maybe a challenge in terms of the language that is represented in that article as compared to the way the plan is written mm-hmm. currently. So the current forest management plan says certain percentages of the forest will be managed for older forest structure, sort of intermediate forest characteristics, and very early forest characteristics that we would have immediately after a clear-cut harvest, for example. So the changes that the board voted on at that time were to decrease the percent of the landscape that would be managed for that older forest structure. So previous to that revision, the forest management plan at that time said that 40 to 60% of the landscape would be managed for this older forest structure. And what the board voted on and directed us to do was to reduce that to a range of 30 to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that article, where it sounds like they're saying 30-70, it actually was in a pretty different context. So it was in the context of what we call structure-based management. And we did make revisions, as I just described, and we're increased harvest. We're actually at about 220 million board feet in the Northwest annually. We implemented that for a while, and it was still evident because of the strength of our projections looking at the future at revenue. We could predict that even with those changes that we were going to continue to see problems with our forest development fund. So back to the drawing board and the effort we're in right now that now is saying, you know, structure-based management had some very good benefits, but we're going to put that aside. And instead of structure-based management, which the premise of that was sort of managing every acre over time, that there would be this sort of shifting mosaic of forest structures. That's a really different concept than the one we're moving to, which says we're going to take 30% of the landscape, manage that for conservation, and that's sort of in a box, and we're going to take 70% of the landscape, and in that area, managed for maximum revenue to achieve our revenue goals. So maximize volume and value on that 70%. And as Doug said, the board is still working through, is it 70-30, is it, you know, 32-68, and that those sorts of decisions around the allocation are yet to be made as we fulfill the board's information needs for their decisions.
So it sounds like it got implemented. We actually hit the target harvest levels that we thought it would hit, or maybe exceeded it. Potentially. It's referencing that the first on-the-ground effects of the board's decision would likely come in 2012, and it talks about the revised plan at 196 million board feet, but we ended up getting there and beyond. But that still didn't, because for whatever reason, cost drivers, everything, it didn't change the direction of the forest development account.
Correct.
Or it might have slowed the descent.
It slowed the descent.
But it didn't turn it back up to where it was going to start rebuilding.
Right. But that's right, Representative Clem. Yeah. And it is, as you stated, a reflection of the market. So not only could it absorb the increase in harvest volume, but then certainly at the time, stumpage prices were still relatively low. That's really could be characterized as one of the social benefits for managing state forests, is that even in this fluctuation in the market, we provide a fairly steady level of volume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
again,
which
as you
keeps
mentioned,
the mills open,
exactly.
Even though you're selling it
right.
Not the ideal price, but people are staying employed through a mm-hmm. time when there might not be that much
right.
demand.
Who's managing the cube, anybody? Or are we just jumping in and asking questions?
We're still on this slide, I think.
First slide.
So just a question. I mean, I'm looking at, as people are coming to us asking for general fund, and this is my first time on Ways and Means, but, and especially if you have an asset. I mean, we do have an asset in the forest, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, in my head, what keeps playing as we talk about budgets is three budget busters coming in 2017-19 biennium. You know, two of them related to health care, one of them related to PERS. I mean, just walking through the door, we're going to have a huge hole. So when I see us have an asset and we're not necessarily using it to the fullest extent, I mean, how much will we have to increase forest harvest to negate any general fund request that you're asking us for? So, you know, board feed or volume or however you guys track this, like, what would that look like if we couldn't give you the type of general funds? And if we give you general funds this year and you come back next year and need some more, I mean, the reality is, for the next biennium, the reality is it's not there. We're walking into potentially a $3 billion budget hole in 17-19 biennium. So I'm looking at the next biennium and not necessarily concentrating on this one, going, how do we either reduce your costs or increase your yields? Because the money's just not going to be there in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like? What would we have to cut in order to, you know, keep you at even with no general fund allocation?
Representative Parrish, I think that's a really critical and important question. Appreciate you asking it. And certainly the perspective of our request in the context of the general fund challenges, we, you know, really appreciate that challenge that you all face and the decisions that you're making regarding these requests. As far as your question about how much change in volume do we need to get to a place of financial viability and really to be self-sustaining, really that's what this is about. And I think the nature of all the good questions we're hearing today is state forests, because of this asset that we have, can't, you know, our goal, and it's rightfully so, would be to be self-sustaining. And as Doug mentioned, to date, that's primarily through the sale of timber. So in order to, if we continue using that model, and we are currently calculating what sort of change in board feet we would need if we were just wholly reliant on the change in volume to be self-sustaining, it's hard to, I hesitate to put an exact number on that right now because we are still calculating. And part of the challenge with that is is using a fairly sophisticated model to help us understand what the land base can produce in terms of volume off of the percent of the landscape that would be used to maximize harvest. So I am hesitant to put an exact number on that. And as our because our modeling is still in progress, and in fact, we're getting direction from the Board of Forestry about what needs to go into that model.
I would add that we feel that we're probably under-investing to the tune of about $6 to $7 million a year in terms of the types of things that we should be doing: recreation, education, interpretation, young stand management, fertilization, research, monitoring, those things that do not generate revenue. We've throttled back on that because we don't have the revenue right now to invest in those. And so that's kind of order of magnitude.
Let me maybe ask a different way, I guess, because, I mean, if we were to increase enough to cover your, you know, cover the general fund ask, either in this biennium or going into the next one, which I think is going to be even harder for us, I mean, are we talking about, like, mowing down the forest, or are we talking about, you know, I mean, as a percentage, how much is the public going to see or feel or feel like, you know, we are degrading the forest in such a way that, you know, that it hits that social side of having, you know, good forests and healthy forest management. And I just go back to that because one of the finance issues I'm dealing with right now that in that 2017-19 biennium, for example, is an increase of $3,000 a public employee in my local school district for a healthcare cost annually. So when you multiply out that type of a number across everybody who's a public employee in the state at all levels of government, that's a really big hit that's coming that we are not prepared to even start dealing with this session. And so when I look at, you are both a profit center and have some cost center, and I've operated a department like that before. You know, when you run a program in a school that collects money, you know, you're a profit center that operates with the cost center around you, and in order to make sure that you're not tapping into the cost side, if you have a way to make dollars, then you have a sort of a fiduciary responsibility to do that. And I just feel like we're coming to the point where if we can't solve this, you know, some of the things that you're asking us for, I guess what I would like to see is what's really want versus need in your budget. And I'd love to have my kids go out in the forest and have you teach them things, but that's more a want than a need. And so as I'm starting to talk with folks and knowing what's coming in the next biennium for costs, I'm hoping we start talking about, you know, if we had to get pared down to what's just need versus what's want in your budget, can you, if we don't cut more trees, how do you shave out the want? Mm-hmm. And versus what actually just keeps your lights on and keeps you moving. And I haven't seen that yet out of anybody's budgets or any of these natural resource budgets we've looked at.
Anybody else? Yes,
Representative. I may need to just save this to the end, but we had talked early on about the, because I'm a Common School Fund fanatic, and we talked early on about your administrative rate and the fact that it was at 36.25% versus the 25%, and you had indicated to me that that was based on statute. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of having a hard time wrapping my head around that unless you have an agreement with counties that we're unaware of. Because if you look through ORS 530.110, it still is indicative of a 25%. Is there some sort of agreement that you have in writing with counties? I realize that there's a 15%. Anyway, yeah. Can you
Sure.
Do you have an agreement with counties? Do you have some performance standards that counties have placed on you to manage the fund? And do you keep a requisite fund balance of those additional dollars? And even if so, I still can't get it still isn't adding up to the 36.25%, no matter how you calculate that in statute to even come to that amount. There's nothing in statute that equals 36.25%.
So the revenue distribution formula is based on statute, and it is the 36%. And so I would want to describe that that's not necessarily, so I want to differentiate that between an administrative rate. I mean, that is the state's share to manage everything associated with the business. It's basically to run the state forest business. So I just want to differentiate that from the, because I know we all talk about administration and administrative rates, and we went through our administrative services pop yesterday. So that 36% is, it's administration, it's you know, road maintenance, it's the full package of running state forests, that rate has been developed over time through statute and I can't point to you I don't have the statute book here in front of me, but I will follow up with you and give you the specific reference that defines that number and the history of how we got to that number. But that is a accepted, agreed upon with the counties. That's SOP with the trust land counties in terms of how those dollars are distributed. It has changed over time. And it started out back in 1941. And I will provide that reference to you.
Okay. Because that would be great. I just need to wrap my head around that because it specifically says 75% of all such revenues remaining after these percentages are disposed to the counties mm-hmm. unless written consent has been given. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering if there's been written consent by counties and it says unless otherwise consented in advance and in writing by the counties.
Right.
And so I just want to make sure that if that is the case, that that's being done because those dollars are important to those counties. So if you could do that for me,
we'll follow
up
with you, as well as the kind of the points in time when that formula has changed and a little bit of history about that evolution.
Because the statute isn't indicative of that, so... Unless you've combined statutes.
Chair Hansel, Representative Hack, we do have a limited amount of time for the hearing. We do want to move on to some other policy packages and the KPMs. I do have a graphic that deals with the funding of the state forests and the other funds for the Department of Forestry in my office. I'd be happy to go over that with you.
Okay.
And so we can look at a number of those, how those funds move through the state forests and through the counties, and I'd be happy to share that with you.
Great. Thank you.
I just want to do one quick follow-up and then let you continue from what Representative Parrish asked concerning the potential for that. It's my understanding that even with the most optimistic harvest scenario that you have, if you just went strictly to your Forest Practices Act, you are still way below in total board feet that you would harvest in comparison to the annual growth of board feet within the same forest land. So that I think the resource, it seems to me, just on the figures, is certainly there for that increase and a sustainable harvest and you don't even reach what the annual growth is. Am I correct on that?
I think we're working to there are different figures about what that growth rate is, and the unique history of these lands having burned four times and been reforested by hand, some of which is affected by a disease called Swiss needle cast, and having a good picture of what that inventory actually is and what rate it is growing at and what that number is. I mean, it sounds like it ought to be an easy number to reach out and grab, but I think past planning efforts that we've been engaged with have been based on data that I think from our standpoint today was not as strong as we would like it to be. And Liz was kind of careful about the range, which I appreciate, because we we want to make sure that we have the right number there. I would say that, you know, there is we're trying to find that right spot between you know, the suite of benefits that are described in GPV and the overall productivity of these lands. I know that I've heard 53%. I know we're thinking that it's higher than that. The percentage of what we're actually harvesting relative to growth rate is higher than that. I think that's one of those questions that the board has asked us as well.
Fair enough. Why don't we continue?
I think we're going to move to package 132. So you'll recall that we're talking about those non-revenue generating aspects of state forest management and how we cover those costs, which brings us to research and monitoring.
Yeah, thank you, Doug. So again, this POP 132 addresses state forest research and monitoring, and this program was developed to meet information needs for continuous improvement in our long-term forest management plans, and that has actually been the topic of our conversation this morning, clearly with the questions you all have been presenting. So this is what we characterize as an adaptive management approach, and it supports the Board of Forestry's commitment to make science-based policy decisions. The foundation of this science-based process relies on a long-term commitment to research and monitoring. Again, during the 2009 recession, ODF reduced our research and monitoring program, and this was done through significant reductions in staff as well as reduced investments in research cooperatives. So this POP would again provide what we consider as bridge funding for $650,000 to help support the research and monitoring program. And the funds would be used to help us revise our research and monitoring plan, and this research and monitoring plan is important for helping us define and prioritize specific projects that we use to measure the success of our forest management plan. Again, some of the topics that we have been discussing this morning. So without this POP, ODF would have insufficient funds to meet statutory obligations for research and monitoring that evaluates and supports this science-based forest management. So with that, I could turn to our last POP, 133. And this POP addresses support for our South Fork inmate camp. A little bit of background on South Fork. It provides what we'd characterize as very important public benefits. It's managed in partnership with Department of Corrections and provides job training opportunities for inmates that help them to build skills and while providing meaningful work experience that teaches personal responsibility and contributes to increased rehabilitation success, all of which provide broad social benefits for Oregonians. The inmate crew provides multiple specific services, including a dedicated firefighting workforce for the state, reforestation activities on state forests, and also the maintenance and construction of recreation trails and campgrounds on state forests. So this $750,000 POP is focused on the actual component of all those aspects of South Fork that in which they're helping us and supporting the recreational services that we are providing off of state forest. So again, this would be considered as bridge funding that would do a couple of things. It would allow us to partially shift funds from this timber revenue to general funds that are associated with specific positions at South Fork. And again, we're seeing this as a bridge funding to do that. It would diversify the state forest revenue with a focus on the recreational support provided by South Fork, and it provides an opportunity to develop appropriate funding sources for the program that provides broad public values. Finally, this bridge funding supports the agency's strategic initiative to improve our state forest business model. So without the POP, state forest would continue to provide significant funding for South Fork without reflecting the public benefits for South Fork, and it would also impinge on our ability to further increase financial viability, again, in the shorter term, while we work to the longer-term solutions that would get us back to a self-sustaining model.
Yes, Mr. Clark.
Who's, what level of jurisdiction are these inmates under? Are they would they normally be state DOC type folks or county?
These are, so Representative Clem, these are inmates that, so the South Fork MA camp is run in partnership with the Department of Corrections. Mm-hmm. These are minimum risk inmates. The Department of Corrections provides security and oversight of the inmates, and we provide the kind of labor direction, the kind of crew coordination. It's a joint effort. But these are folks who are coming from the state's correctional institutions.
In this case, I think it might be appropriate to not have the timber fund bearing the cost of what otherwise would be a DOC charge. But I personally am not, you know, I'm not for ways and means, but I'd like to see a reduction over in the DOC budget to pay for this rather than us and our subcommittee having to find the 750 grand, because I have a lot of other pops I want to pay for. Okay. That this is, you know, this is a DOC cost, personally, I would say. If the co-chair was here, he probably wouldn't say, sorry, you're finding it in this subcommittee, but I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, does that conclude your presentation then?
Presentation on the POPs. We do have a presentation on the key performance measures, which we'd be glad to walk through.
That's cool.
Are you ready for that? Okay. So we're going to ask Satish Upadhyaya, our Chief Financial Officer with ODF, to join us here at the table to walk us through the POPs.
Sure.
And you're going to have to help us get reconfigured. Okay. Thank you.
We've had a really fun.
Good morning, Chair Hansel and members of the subcommittee. For the record, I'm Satish Upadhyaya, Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Forestry. And this time, I will be going through the department's key performance measures, also known as KPMs, with you all. So we also have the other division chiefs present here if needed to answer any questions. The department has 14 key performance measures, and we are proposing that one KPM, KPM 7, be changed. So let's start with the first one, which measures the customer service that the department provides Oregon's forested counties and forest protection associations. It reflects the percentage of county governments and landowner associations that rate ODF's customer service as good or excellent based on five elements. And the five elements are timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and availability of information. The department has set a target of 100%. Each year, half of the commissioners in forested counties are surveyed by our district foresters, and as in previous years, the department has met its target for this KPM. KPM 2 is a self-evaluation conducted by the Board of Forestry. The Board evaluates its performance based on 15 best practices criteria, which were set by the legislature for all boards and commissions, like the Board of Forestry, that have oversight and policy development responsibilities. The Board has chosen a 100% target for this measure, which it has met. KPM 3. This measures the percentage of forest operations that are in compliance with the Forest Practices Act. In 2013, audits conducted on 200 randomly selected harvest units indicated that operators achieved high overall rule compliance, 96% statewide. There was no data collected from 2009 to 2012 due to loss of staff and inadequate resources. So KPM 4, this measures the percentage of Oregon cities that are actively managing their urban and community forest resources. Our target for the measure is that 50% of the cities in Oregon will manage their urban forests. The current achievement is 36%. There are 242 cities in Oregon. Not every city has the interest or ability to manage their urban forests, basically because of resource constraints. So achievement of this KPM is clearly constrained by resource limitations.
Mr. Chair, so what can the department do to encourage cities? You've set this target that suggests that there are things that the department should be doing to help the cities reach this target.
Mr. Chair, the main issue here is, again, resource constraints. Right now, we have essentially 2.5 FTE, and this program has basically been funded with federal dollars, and the federal dollars have been reduced for the program. So it's an issue of resources. Most likely, in the next biennium, this will have to be a priority for the agency, and we have to come forward before you are asking for more resources.
Our focus is really on, is providing service and kind of consult and advice, technology transfer to the cities themselves, to city foresters. So, and it's a two-way street, and so we can offer those resources and that understanding, and they have to meet us and be ready to engage on. And so I think there are some cities that, given the overall fiscal constraint that municipal government that we all face, that this may not bubble up as a priority for them. They may not have the resources to be able to really get after an active urban tree care, tree management program. And so we don't really, our ability to really help them is in establishing tree ordinances, in looking at best management practices, and at providing information about urban tree care. And again, we do that all based with the federal funding that we have. Don't have the resources some of them may not have the resources to get there. Larger communities that have made investments are recognized through the Tree City USA program, and our capacity really is not to, run a program for communities, but to really help them develop their own programs. So ways in which we can further engage, we host something called the Municipal Forestry Institute. We just hosted it here last year, and we provide training directly to urban foresters and city council folks to understand the benefits of urban trees and forests. And that's something that we could increase that would help them to understand those benefits. I think there's still going to be a limitation in their ability to bring their own resources to the table.
Just if I could follow up, and if you were to disaggregate those 36, would they be the larger cities that are doing it, the larger budgeted cities,
yes,
if I could put it that way?
Yeah, I say as a general, in general, I think there are some smaller communities that do a really good job, and oftentimes it relates to a person or a handful of people who are very, very committed to the resource.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So moving along, KPM 5. Now, the story this measure tells is the percentage increase in total revenues produced by state forests compared to the previous years. Now, we've had quite a bit of discussions about KPMs regarding state forests earlier today. So please note that this measure focuses on the total revenue generated from Oregon state forests. The target is set on forecasted expectations in the timber market, and it's influenced by the forecasted price and demand for timber rather than the amount of timber harvested. The target, as you can see, is decreasing due to the expectation that price or demand for timber will decrease in the next few years. Any questions on this?
Let's just stay there for just a second.
This is a complicated one.
Yeah. I don't understand it.
And what it's showing is that, for instance, if we look at 2013, we look at what this is showing us is that the total revenue off of state forests in 2013 was 8.3% greater than the total revenue off of state forests in 2012.
Yeah.
So this is a relative measure.
Yeah.
This is not an absolute measure that's looking at volume or value.
So you could still be losing money.
Well, I think
not
over,
as much.
Depends on with the vantage point that you look at,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So if you stand way back, yeah. But if you look at year over year, this would suggest that that year over year there is these certainly the last 3 years that there has, even though the 5.5 looks like it's less, there it's still an increase in total revenue. It's just not as much as the year before, and that is a function, mm-hmm. direct function of the market. And so when we talk about we've had a little conversation about KPMs and having meaningful KPMs that help you and that help us. This is a particularly complicated one.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, I think we referenced particularly foreign markets are what we are sort of expecting to be down.
So the drop in the China, there's been a significant export market, right? And so that affects domestic supply and the domestic price as well. And I think the current projections and thinking is that the Chinese market, the Chinese export market, is dropping, which will reduce the overall value. And we're seeing that. And you know, the projection is that those stumpage rates are going to decrease over time.
And just, I want to make sure, because people get sensitive about China and wood, we don't export any raw logs.
Thank you.
We process it, and then they buy that finished product.
Exactly.
And we're worried that might go.
There is a prohibition against the export of state timber to export markets. That's correct.
I can imagine somebody hearing about us being too worried about China not buying enough.
Right.
Make one of shirts, not raw.
It's just that it affects the overall kind of log market that we all operate in.
Yeah.
We're a little bit, we're pressing the time limit, so please continue.
Right.
It's not your fault. We got a lot of questions.
Yep.
So now moving along to KPM 6, this relates to our fire protection division, which also regulates prescribed burning in the state and works to minimize smoke emissions and intrusions into communities. The agency's target is zero smoke intrusions into the smoke-sensitive area. During this evaluation period, there was a total of 3,099 units burned with three intrusions.
Why was 2010 so bad? Do we know?
I don't know.
Relatively speaking.
That's something we could check and get back to you.
Yeah. We'll follow up.
We'll follow up.
Thanks.
Sure. So now moving along to KPM 7. KPM 7A, along with 7B, has focused on the value of having some type of formal management plan for private landowners, which could include participating in an approved forest certification program. 7A focused on industrial forest lands, and 7B focused on family forest lands. There is no data reported for industrial forest lands in 2013. Per the feedback received during the 2013 legislative session, the department reviewed and proposes to revise this measure to focus only on family forest landowners for whom the department provides direct support for management planning.
So do you want to look at this?
So the next one is 7B, the same thing. There's no data here, but we want to replace this with the revised KPM 7, which focuses on the acres of family forest lands fully engaged in sustainable forestry. Approximately 509,349 acres, or 11% of family forest lands, are managed under an approved certification system, stewardship agreement, or other approved management plan. The target is 894,145 acres. Now, to increase the number of fully engaged family forest landowners, the department needs to provide additional technical and financial assistance to landowners. And as discussed during our budget hearings earlier, the department does not receive any state support for this effort and relies solely on federal dollars. Any questions on this? This is one measure we are proposing that it be changed. So, moving along, KPM 8. KPM 8 focuses on water quality in forests and is based on the Oregon Water Quality Index. The index is used to describe general stream water quality and general trends of increasing and decreasing water quality. Forestry data is a subset of the statewide monitoring stations. Targets were set by the Department of Environmental Quality statewide for all land uses combined. So this KPM 8C helps set the big picture context and focuses on the percentage of monitored forested streams that have water quality in good or excellent condition. The statewide target is 60%, and the monitoring data shows that 65%, or just under two-thirds of all monitored forested streams, have water quality in good or excellent condition. So moving along, KPM 8A reports the number of forested streams with significantly increasing trends in water quality. The statewide target is 75%, and monitoring data indicates that about 8% of forested stream sites have significantly increasing trends. Now, it may be unrealistic to expect continued increasing water quality trends on stream sites with water quality already in good or excellent conditions. So another way to look at this KPM is the number of sites that show a significantly improving trend has increased slightly. Now, conversely, KPM 8B reports the number of forested streams with significantly decreasing trends in water quality. The target is zero, and monitoring data indicates that about 15% of forested sites have significantly decreasing trends in water quality. Again, another way to look at this, the number of forested sites that show a significantly decreasing trend has steadily declined over the past 4 years. Now moving along to KPM 9. This measures the cumulative investments made by private and public landowners in voluntary projects that contribute to the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds and for the Oregon Conservation Strategy. Currently, data are only available for the Oregon Plan investments. The target amounts are predicted cumulative expenditures by private forested owners in Oregon Plan restoration activities. In 2013, private forest landowners invested $1.1 million, bringing the cumulative investments to just shy of $99 million. KPM 10, now this is another KPM that relates to state forests and focuses on the percentage of state-owned forest land in Tillamook and Clatsop counties that is complex forest structure. Now, complex forest structure provides a diversity of forest species and conditions with large and old trees and ample downwood and snags for wildlife. The target is 30% and the actual measured during the period was 17%. Now, complex forest structure develops slowly and it's anticipated to take decades to achieve the 30% target.
I would add that this is a KPM that is really tied to the structure-based management approach on state forests and, you know, pending a change to approach moving, if we move toward the land allocation approach, this is a KPM that would need to be completely restructured.
So moving along, KPM 11. This focuses on fire suppression effectiveness and looks specifically at the percentage of wildland forest fires that ODF has jurisdiction that are controlled at 10 acres or less. Our target here is 98%, control 98% of all fires within our jurisdictions at less than 10 acres. The department has achieved this target only once in the last 10 years. The actual for the reported period was 93.04%.
Point out that the last couple years there are in the midst of a drought and, of course, our bad fire seasons.
So KPM 12, this represents the number of human-caused wildland fires per 100,000 Oregon residents. It demonstrates the effectiveness of the fire prevention program at preventing human-caused fires. This is one of those KPMs where the lower the number, the better. The target is to have no more than 14 fires per 100,000 Oregon residents. The actual for this period was 17.15 fires. The department has been partnering with Keep Oregon Green and other cooperators to control human-caused fires. KPM 13. This relates to damage to Oregon forests from insects, disease, and other agents, and focuses on the percentage of Oregon forest lands without significant damage and mortality as assessed by aerial surveys. The target is that 97% of all Oregon forests without significant damage. The actual, based on the most recent aerial survey, is 98%. So we are meeting this target. Now to the last, KPM 14.
Representative Clay.
Again, sorry, it's been a while since I've been on this topic. What is going on with sudden oak death? We had a quarantine zone. We had to expand it, and then I went off the committee and haven't paid attention to what happened since then to the outbreak.
Sudden oak death is still very much an issue. There is the quarantine zone, and I think it has actually spread outside the quarantine zone. I think our ability to really eradicate sudden oak death is not a target at this point. It's kind of how do we contain it, we are utilizing, it's all federal funds that are helping us manage sudden oak death, and I'd like to put you in touch with Peter Doherty after the hearing, and he can give you the exact details of where it is and what the spread rate is looking like, and what the specific control activities that we're taking.
I remember at the time California had basically decided they couldn't stop it anymore, and it sounds like we're starting to get there, which is sad. But the state probably stopped investing too during the downturn, which we were trying to put more money into that.
I think it's a cautionary tale as we look at the spread westward of things like the emerald ash borer and other invasive species.
Yeah, one more.
The last one. And there's not much to report on this one. This relates to the utilization of forest biomass and focuses on the number of bone dry tons of forest biomass converted to biofuels, electricity, or steam. Previous data came from the Oregon Department of Energy. Currently, that data is not available, and the Department of Forestry is looking for a new data source. So with this, we end our presentation on the KPM, so we'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Yes.
Can I just, this isn't directly related to the KPMs, but Doug, you and I spoke offline about OFRI and the role of OFRI, what they contribute to, explaining programs and the potential role that they could be playing for, with the federal forest initiatives, helping to promote it, their activities put to better use in that sense. Do you track at, there's not a KPM on OFRI, but how do you sort of track their value, their performance?
So we have, the department sits on their board, so we work with them closely. We regularly, in terms of both in terms of their development of their budget, their elections of their officers, our participation in their annual work planning and their strategic planning, we're engaged in that. The discussion was really around the narrative associated with collaboratives and with the work on federal forests, and I think that OFRI, Paul Barnum, his staff have been focused on how to better describe the impact of restoration work on federal forest land. So I'd say OFRI provides that kind of common table around which everyone in the forestry sector, public and private, can help communicate what's happening with Oregon's forests. I've been really pleased to see that they are focusing on building some of their capacity around forest products and forest products marketing.
With that, I am will adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you.